Yes. Let's just jump right in and talk about pretty much everything that we haven't been able to talk about for the last 2 weeks in our little bit of sabbatical, which it seems like the absolute worst time of the year to have a sabbatical, a 2 week sabbatical on a podcast about Google.
Sure. Yeah.
Totally fair. It absolutely is. We're very well aware of this fact.
At the same time, the week before the event, everybody knows what's happening.
Another thing too is I think there's lots of noise, and it's hard to break through the noise a little bit. Even the people that don't typically cover Google, or they don't typically cover Alphabet, or they definitely don't cover Google's first party hardware to the degree to which we do. All those bigger kind of platforms, and not to say that we're small, but really, really big platforms are trying to get their word in on all this stuff. I guess we'll try to be optimistic and say that the benefit of missing the last couple of weeks is that now we're going to be able to have this stream and talk about some things that Google announced and talk about our thoughts on them. Hopefully cutting through the noise a little bit. So thank you for those that have been patient with us the last couple of weeks. We know we went kind of dark and didn't really give an explanation. But yeah, we're back. And this is our show. Pretty much we're going to talk about everything that Google announced at Made by Google on October 15th, which is almost 10 days ago now, which is crazy. Time flies. And we're also just going to talk about our thoughts as far as we can share them, which thankfully is to a great degree. We have a lot of thoughts. We've had a lot of time to stew on things in the last 10 days. So let's just jump right into this, to the show. Let's talk about Pixel 4 first. And normally I would go the other way around because I want to keep people around to the end of the show to talk about the thing that everyone cares about. But I'm just going to give you a gift, a grace today, because you've been waiting 2 weeks for us to talk about this, probably our diehard listeners. But yeah, so you have a Pixel 4 on you right now. I'm assuming in your hand right now.
Yes. Oh, so orange.
Very, very good choice. What's your biggest, like, let's just start with this. What's your takeaway having used it for several days or a few days now? What have you noticed about it that maybe you didn't notice at the event in the hands-on area?
I much prefer holding the Pixel 3 compared to the Pixel 4. The Pixel 4 is a bit thicker. It's sizably thicker all around. And my biggest complaint is about the curvature of the edges. It's not as tight as the Pixel 3, so like you're holding, it's harder to like get the grip on, for me anyways. And I would say the added thickness is fine if there's an actual advantage to it, but in terms of like pure hard battery specs, there isn't. It's a smaller battery than the Pixel 3. So
right, you would think the added thickness would mean a larger battery, but not only did they not increase the size of the battery from Pixel 3, by the way, we're talking about the small, I guess you could call it the baby, yes, Pixel 4. They not only didn't increase the battery size, they decreased the battery size, which I guess from people on the outside that, you know, have been watching this, you know, since the specs first leaked a long time ago, they've been expecting the smaller Pixel 4 battery to be awful. I guess to us, it seems like a lot of the reviews have confirmed that fear. What's your experience been with it?
Again, I have a charger with me all day, so I have a wireless charger on my desk. It's not actually reflective. And actually, I'm on this crazy, like, I'm using two phones actively because I can't have my work G Suite on the Pixel 4. So I'm like still treating the Pixel 3 as a daily driver. And it's maddening. It's insane and how you have to use two phones. But yeah, it's so with those two factors in mind, I do believe, and you also believe this, that most office workers won't have an issue with Pixel 4. But I do think that other people who are working different kinds of jobs, and even on the weekend, if you're spending the weekend away from your desk, away from power, I think it might be a real issue.
Yeah, and I got in trouble a little bit on Twitter for talking about this, and because I guess it seemed like people thought that I was coming out to defend the Pixel 4 battery as if I was, you know, I'm going to be the one reviewer, the one Google shill who's going to come out and tell everyone that the smaller Pixel 4's battery is totally fine, and Google definitely paid me a lot of money to say that. It seems like the general response that I got, and it's not what I was saying. I was more saying I think I had a problem with the minority of the reviews, definitely the minority of the reviews. I will say this. I think that the majority of them, more than 50% of them, seemed to weigh the battery issue fairly. And I think a minority of them took the battery issue and kind of blew it out of proportion, to the degree that they basically said Pixel 4, small battery, dies in 4 hours. And they kind of took it this extreme and said, you know, you just absolutely should, the smaller Pixel 4 is completely off the table this year. You absolutely should not use it, or you should not get it. And honestly, my pushback on that is, I don't think you should buy a Pixel 4 at all right now, because in 3 weeks, it's probably going to be 50% off. Buy one, get one free or something.
Oh, I'm not ready. I'm not ready for that news cycle. Not even a news cycle. I'm just not ready for that cycle.
Yeah. So don't buy a Pixel 4 at all until it's $400 anyway. I'm being facetious, but I also did kind of have an I liked The Verge's kind of take on it, which, you know, obviously it's a trade-off. It's definitely, I can't really say, you know, if you're going to spend $800 on a phone and we're comparing multiple phones side by side, it's obviously it's going to have the worst. I mean, of any $800 phone on the market, the smaller Pixel 4 has to have the worst battery life of all of them, right? Pretty much. And so if not factually, so I get that, but I think that you can take that argument to an extreme, compare specs side by side to a degree to which you're just making a judgment call on value, or whether or not someone should make a purchase decision based on weighing a spec sheet against another spec sheet, or the screen on time data versus other phone screen on time data. And you're not really looking at the phone holistically. You know, I feel like I could just as easily say there are some $800 phones that have a poor overall user experience, and for that reason you absolutely should not buy them, and it's a deal breaker. And for me personally, kind of, on some expensive Android phones, the overall user experience is a little bit of a deal breaker, and that's where the smaller Pixel 4 shines. And so I think that some things, this is an unpopular opinion, I guess, maybe in the Android space, but I think there are some things that are just seen as non-negotiable, and other things that aren't. And there may be things that some people consider non-negotiable that other people don't. And it seems like the reviewers definitely saw battery life as definitely a non-negotiable issue, and didn't really, to me, it didn't seem like some of them didn't really consider the whole picture. So,
yeah, I guess in this day and age, like, battery has really stopped being battery issues, battery life concerns haven't been a big, we haven't had to consider that for quite a long time, which is a testament to how good smartphones have gotten and the idea that the phone you're using is good enough.
Right.
So I guess the reaction was, a reversal was very much this reaction.
Yeah, I guess two things on that note is, one, is the battery life worse than the Pixel 3? I don't think so.
And I think it's too early to tell, because phone, it takes a while to adjust to everything, and very well may be the same or slightly better, because again, software optimizations are surely there.
Right. So that's one point I have, is why did we not hear this uproar last year? Which people mentioned that that smaller Pixel 3 had bad battery life. That was mentioned. That's not what I'm talking about. Talking about why was there not there this disproportionate kind of black and white, I can't, the Pixel 4 is absolutely for no one kind of verdict that we saw a lot. I don't really understand that, why we got that this year and why we didn't get it last year. And then another thing, I had another point, but I can't remember it. Yeah, can't remember it. All right. Well, I'm going to remember it eventually, but
yeah, eventually. So yeah, that's from just using the phone for a few days. It's thicker than I thought it would be, and I don't feel like I'm getting any appreciable value from it. So that's a downside. So this is my first phone with a face unlock system. And it's futuristic is the word I'll use, my favorite word. It definitely feels very futuristic to the point where it feels kind of insecure because I don't think it should be that easy to get into my phone, but it is and it works. And
okay, pause. Yeah. I just remember the other point and it's a really big deal. The other point is, who's making an $800 flagship phone that's the physical size of the smaller Pixel 4? Not many people. And I guess my point on that is it creates an option where the market is going a certain direction where it's like larger and larger and larger phones. It creates an option for people who may need a physically smaller device and are willing to trade off on battery to get it.
And
I think that you kind of fall into that category.
Absolutely. Small phones all the way.
Anyway, so, Face ID. Sorry, I had to get that out because it's going to bother me if I didn't.
Yeah.
So face unlock, it's futuristic. Have you had a chance to use, at all the iPhone's face unlock stuff? Or is this your absolute freshest, like brand new experience with this?
Brand new experience, but I also did use like a smart lock, that face. Galaxy Nexus era. Yeah, all that. I use that.
The one that got removed with the Pixel 3.
Yes, I used to use that. And this is different. It works at night, which is very, very, nice. Very handy. But at the same time, I do put the gesture of like putting it the thing while your phone is in your pocket and while you're in the process of bringing it up and you place your finger on the motion on the fingerprint sensor. I think that is faster. I do believe that is fast. That is still faster. Maybe I'll get used to it more, but I think the option of both wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Both fingerprint and face?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's the direction that things are going to go. I think that the argument for that is that face can be primary and fingerprint can be backup. And currently face is primary and PIN is backup. So it makes sense to say, you know, to add that technology in as an additional layer. Obviously fingerprint is more secure than a 4-digit PIN.
Yeah.
But
what makes this current situation particularly egregious is how only 5 apps support face unlock in the Play Store. And banking apps don't support it. And that's like a real step backwards in day-to-day usage. It's in terms of having to manually enter whatever full password for that, for accounts and such. It's really... A surprising step back.
It's unfortunate that the Pixel 4 is the only device in the market that's going to push the adoption of those APIs, because, well, at least for now. I mean, I think the good news is that I think that in the next year or two, a lot of Android phones are going to move to these IR-based facial security systems. And so it's going to be ubiquitous eventually. But it's just like, unlike Apple, like Google can't just flip a switch because they're dependent on the ecosystem. So very unfortunate, but something you gotta live. What do you think about Soli? So there's three tent poles to Soli, right? There's their motion sense stuff. There's, I guess the ability to, you know, it has like a physical awareness of you. So when you go to pick up the phone, you know, like it knows that you're reaching for it. And then the third thing is the dismissing alarms and calls. Is that part of motion sense?
Yeah, and like the Pikachu wallpaper and games and
whatnot. Yeah. Have you used it at all in the last few days?
Okay, so it turns off when you're in airplane mode, which is quite annoying. But otherwise, it's So if somebody who hasn't used Zoe, they can just, I think their biggest argument would be you just can use the lock screen controls to change music or whatever. But Zoe allows you to do very imprecise general actions without much precision and to just like change the next song. And that's kind of nice. It's like your phone could be like somewhere further off and you can't really see the screen. But if you just vaguely gesture, make a gesture, you can change music. It's the concept works. And I think there's a use case, a specific use case for it. That said, it's like 50-50 on whether motion sense can accurately, whether I'm doing the motion sense gesture correctly. It's very
disappointing.
There was an iFixit teardown today that showed how small of the Pixel 4 XL, how small the motion sense sensor, the Zoe radar sensor is. And I'm really more curious about like a Google Home device with Zoe. That is always on. There's no power restrictions. That has presumably a very wide field of view and ability to do precise actions, like adjusting the volume, which is something I really want to do with Zoe on my phone, but cannot. So that's a what if for the future. But it's interesting. It's interesting technology.
I'm curious if they're going to improve this, and not by next year. Well, that's a whole other question. Is this going to stick around for the next Pixel phone, or have they already decided? I mean, the Pixel 5 is already pretty much done. So at this point, it's getting close to the end of the prototype stages. So it's like they've probably already made a decision, or they're close to making a final decision on whether or not next year's Pixel is going to have the Zoe radar sensor or. Yeah, and I feel like they're going to stick with it for at least one more year.
Yeah,
they've got to. It would look really embarrassing to debut this and then walk it back in less than a year.
Yeah, I think it has to spread to the other products too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think we'll definitely see it move to the homes as well in the next year.
But the very curious thing is what Google is doing with ultrasound. And I guess we can talk about the Nest Mini very quickly. The Nest Mini has ultrasound detection, which basically uses sound waves. When you hover over the Nest Mini, it can show volume controls and all that. That's on the Nest Mini as well, Max. But ultrasound detection is not yet enabled on the smart display. But the smart display has camera detection features where you can swipe to pause music, which is curious in how much motion sense is this concept of air gestures versus Zoe is the powering technology behind it. It's curious how Google wants to take this, whether all these things could one day become motion sense regardless of the underlying technology, or whether Zoe is the future for Google. And that's a very curious.
It depends on how cheap they can make those radars, I guess. But I don't know. Yeah. It's interesting to me. I feel like this is a weird blunder on Google's part, like launching Motion Sense, and it literally every single review says that it basically doesn't work. It just doesn't work basically, and that's really embarrassing. Especially since I don't know if you remember, but during the event they showed a whole clip about how they were working on basically, designing the sensor and kind of customizing it to try and calibrate it, I guess that's the word I was looking for. They're trying to calibrate it so that, you know, they showed like someone holding a mug and like moving the mug over the
floor.
It didn't trigger, and then they did the hand and it triggered, and they did all this, you know, I'm sure they have to do all this math with the radar waves to figure out, you know, like what it is that's moving over. I feel like maybe they over calibrated it, because what they tried to do was they tried to get rid of false positives, basically. They tried to make it so that you couldn't accidentally, be moving your hand over your phone or something, which is something we do on accident. I mean, I've got my phone sitting right here next to me, and I've moved my hand over it 10 times in the last 2 minutes. And that would have, if I was listening to music, it would have switched the music back and forth on me, and that would be really annoying. But it seems like they calibrated it too far the other direction, where now, you know, people are, you have to use a very fine, specific kind of gesture to,
yeah,
to trigger. And they didn't provide any information on screen or just intuitively or in the manual or anywhere on how to do. Is there even a correct way to do the gesture to get it to trigger every time? I don't even know if we know that. You know, some reviewers were showing that like they tried to move their hand in a certain way or hold their hand a certain way to get it to activate it. Just couldn't figure out any consistent way to do it. And so I don't know. It's a weird thing that it shipped.
Yeah.
How did this get? Is this just not finished? Like, are they going to roll out fixes in the next month or two that are going to resolve all of this problem, you think?
Yeah.
Maybe roll back the calibration a little bit?
I do think it's a data problem at the end of the day. As it gets more testing, more people in the wild actually using it, I think it will improve. But like for this vision that ATAP is pushing of Sori as a new interaction method and that regular people don't have to, like, who's right. adapting? Is Sori adapting to you or are you adapting to Sori? And right now it's you adapting to Sori. And that,
right.
that honestly, that's what kills a product. If it's too hard from the first time you use it and it never gets better, that's what right. that's the kiss of death of a product.
Yeah, and it's also extremely embarrassing in juxtaposed against the original Sori kind of vision, which was showing extremely fine, you know, motions that were able to control user interfaces with very fine grain control, like, you know, detail. And this is just the exact opposite. Like, what's the point? What is the point of having a radar sensor if it can't do something as basic as seeing whether or not there's a hand going over the top of it? You know, like, the original vision for Sori was not being able to detect a hand. It was like holding your fingers above it and being able to control interfaces and, you know, photo editing apps and stuff, which is like, okay, apparently that's out the window. Or maybe they had to miniaturize the sensor so small that it's useless, basically. I don't know. Is this a hardware issue? Is it partly a hardware issue, partly a software issue? I don't know. But it's I don't know. Altogether, it's pretty embarrassing, I think, for Google. And that's not to say it's not useful in some ways, because even if the motion sense stuff is
worthless,
it still is very much benefiting the face.
Absolutely. Model. Yeah, absolutely that.
Anyways.
Yeah.
I think what they should do is they should just, I mean, make it all or nothing. Like, just turn off the calibration on the motion sense and just let it trigger. Let it have those false positives so that at least you can use it. I don't know.
Yeah, at least it's showing you doing something. It's showing you that the phone is doing something.
All right. Yeah. So let's move on to the next Pixel 4 thing before we have to kind of just do rapid fire on the other hardware. So new assistant. Have you had a chance to use it much? You mentioned to me earlier today that it's not really, or yesterday, not really part of your natural workflow. or it's just not part of your, I guess, it doesn't, you're not talking verbally to your phone very often. So when you do use it, you're typing, right?
Yeah, keep talking and doxing my review, which comes out tomorrow. But yeah, it's okay. Again, I don't want to spoil my central thesis, but it accomplishes everything that Google showed on stage. Let's put it on stage at 10:15, not Google I/O 2019. I'll just leave it at that. Like, everything that's in Google's marketing, everything that they demoed on stage, it 100% works.
Cool. Well, I guess we'll just leave.
Yeah.
For the full review.
The camera.
What would you say? Yeah, that's the kind of the last point we need to get to. If the sirens in the background would stop going off.
California's on fire, for the record. So that's not my fault this time.
Yeah, totally. Pixel 4 camera. Apparently, this is just the most recent tidbit that's off the top of my head because I saw a tweet today. Apparently, they actually did work on putting 4K 60 in, and then they ditched it at the last second, according to Michal over at XDA. So that's an interesting tidbit, but we've heard from people, Alphabet Scoop exclusive, that part of the reason that, or a big part of the reason that didn't have 4K 60 is because of battery situation. I would imagine that 4K 60 on the smaller Pixel 4 is like gonna drop your battery down to like 30 minutes screen on time or something.
Yeah, and honestly, like Google is like, so they redesigned the camera interface, and the main UI does not have like a switcher between resolutions anymore. If you want 4K, you can go to the settings and enable 4K. Otherwise, it's just 1080p. I think there's not even an option for 720p anymore to manually do that. So they're clearly obscuring the interface in like that Apple-like manner where specs don't matter, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that this isn't to say that Google on video could do better. They could do all the camera stuff they're doing, but apply it to video, which is it's a real computational issue because video is so much more intensive. They can't do that the same stuff they do with camera unless they get a more powerful processor. Imagine what Google could be doing if they had Apple's silicon at their disposal.
Yeah. Yeah, Apple's ethos is specs don't matter, but at the same time, we're going to do what we do, if we do it, the very best you possibly can.
Yes.
And so, you know, to this day, the camera app on the iPhone does not let you choose you have to go to the settings app. You have to go to a separate app to choose the video quality, video recording quality. I'm pretty sure that's the case. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's very well agreed at this point that the iPhone has the best video performance, even with the Pixel 4. Is kind of like, okay, you know, like last month, it was like, great, iPhone 11 is here. You know, it seems to be great on stills and video, but we're going to have to wait for the Pixel 4 to see what happens and see what, you know, we can't call it the king or queen until we get the Pixel 4. And it looks like now that Pixel 4 is out, the jury is still out on stills, and seemed like Pixel 4 might have a slight leg up because of some of the things that Google did this year. Uh-huh. But on video, obviously, the iPhone is pulled ahead.
Yeah. So speaking physically, speaking about like the camera as a physical thing on the back of the phone, it is weird having a square there. Like you feel it, you accidentally bump into it, and it's this gigantic flat surface that you don't really know what you're doing, that why it's there. It feels very weird to have that compared to a tiny circle. That's to say that the bump isn't actually very tall, but it's just you are more likely to come across it because of the wider surface area. It's odd, and I don't know why people just don't like at least center it or something.
Well, have you, I guess it's bigger because there's another sensor, so let's talk about that segue. You know, telephoto, have you gotten a chance to try out Super Res?
Yes,
Super
I have.
Ultra Super Amazing Res Zoom, as it's have called it.
So you need good lighting conditions. That's one thing, which I guess makes sense. And it's honestly so good for text, to zoom in on text and far away signs and street signs and posts, that kind of thing. It's actually very cool. I'm looking forward to take it out in nature, but it's really, this is it. I think Google did the right thing with using telephoto, because people zoom in more than they zoom out with a wide angle,
right? Yeah, and I don't want to go deep on the wide angle versus telephoto conversation. I think that next year we'll see both. I think the phone should have both. It seems like that's just the table stakes at this point. However, I do sympathize for hashtag team telephoto people, because the biggest thing for me that I hear from people who take photos of their kids is like sports games. So like, I mean, this is probably like the most common way that people who have children use their phones, their phone cameras, I should say, taking photos of their kids. And what kind of environments are they normally taking photos of their kids? You know, taking photos of their son or daughter at, you know, gymnastics practice or baseball, or, you know, and you're trying to take a decent shot of your kid from like 100 feet away. And I think that having the telephoto plus Google's far superior computational stuff, super res zoom on the telephoto, and it's been shown that the Pixel 4 is demonstrably better than the iPhone 11 in terms of this, you know, 11 Pro on the telephoto stuff at 8x. So I think that's a big win for people, and I think that if that's really important to you, then that, I mean, that's a compelling reason to
upgrade to
Pixel. Especially consider an upgrade from a Pixel 2 or Pixel 1 if you're already on a Pixel. So I think that's the main points. I didn't really want to talk about the specs. I didn't want to talk about, you know, the nitty-gritty of the screen quality or you know, microphones, or whether or not it has a headphone jack. By the way, that's kind of not even a conversation this year. Which,
yeah,
I'm glad that that's finally. Although it seems like Google went a step too far, where they didn't even include an adapter in the box this year. But yeah, I'm glad that's not really a conversation anymore. I'm glad we can move past that, I think. But yeah, that seems to be the biggest, I guess, the biggest points on the Pixel. And yeah, we're excited to spend more time with it and get our full review up in the next several days, so keep an eye out for that. We're gonna do deep dives on several aspects of both phones, hardware and software, and camera and battery life and a few things, and then we're gonna kind of compile a lot of those deeper dive stories into full standing standalone reviews for both Pixel 4. So trying to go deeper than anyone else, so keep an eye out for that content. But yeah, let's move on. Let's talk about the rest of the Made by Google event. So besides Pixel 4, we had, I guess we can talk about Pixelbook Go.
Yes.
Is not the Pixelbook 2, which we already figured that out. There's a lot of things we already knew before the event happened, obviously. And one of those things is we realized this is not a successor to the Pixelbook. And if you own an original Pixelbook, you are probably not going to want to side grade to this laptop. But it is an interesting, it's an interesting laptop still.
Yes.
And, I guess, I don't know. I've had my chance to say what I think about it. What are your thoughts about it? People know what my thoughts are on it.
It's a very solid. The hardware is very good, which is something that, if from looking at the price, cheap price, some people might not expect. But it's a very solid hardware. The keyboard is great. The screen is good. I'm not too crazy about the bottom, honestly. It's if the non-ridged pattern could go away and the device becomes slightly thinner, I might have appreciated that more. Otherwise, yeah, it's solid. The speakers are very loud. They're very good speakers on that, especially since the Pixelbooks suck so much. Yeah, it's cute. The corners, everything. They did everything right visually. I know people love the Pixelbook, and the design of the original Pixelbook has a lot to do with it, but I definitely prefer this cutesy shape and design. I do wish the specs were more modern, just from a pure value standpoint. We'll definitely have to see to assess that once it's actually out and we get some testing in. But it's a MacBook Air-like. And I think that is exactly the market that Google wants to go for. Where the Pixelbook was the pro version of their lineup, the Pixelbook Go is the everyman's Chromebook, the everyman's premium Chromebook. And
right.
I think that is a worthy thing to go after.
Yeah, I completely agree that the hardware is really nice. And I said this before when I got my hands on it before it was announced. I really, really, really like the feel and the just general aesthetic of the device. It actually reminds me a lot of that first that first polycarbonate matte black MacBook.
Ooh, yes. Yes.
That's what it reminds me of when I hold it. And it's like, it's not polycarbonate, it's magnesium alloy painted.
Which I have questions about your ability about.
Yeah, we don't we're probably not going to do a job.
Okay.
Yeah.
It feels better than whatever the heck Microsoft is doing, thanks to the fact there's a coating. I'll give them that, definitely. That it's better.
Yeah, and I think just the overall feel of everything just feels really nice. I really just like how soft the painted metal is. And I like I'm personally a really big fan of the ribbed back just because it's unique. And
it's unique. Yeah, you can't deny it. Can't deny that.
Yeah, and it's the ribbed back is kind of like one of those kind of like Google design flourishes that doesn't seem to be objectively bad or good. It's just kind of it's kind of like the top third back on the Pixel before they ditched that. You know, it's like there was no real practical reason. Well, I guess the first one did have a practical reason, and that was for the antennas because it was an all metal phone and it needed to have that glass top. But, you know, and then the second device, same thing. But then the third device, it was all glass on the back. So there was no real reason to have the top be not matte while the bottom third was, or bottom two thirds was. It was just a design flourish. And then that's kind of how the ribbed back on the Pixel Book Go feels to me. It's just a design flourish. I just really like it.
Yeah.
And one really interesting thing about it is it's really weird. Well, for those that don't know, the Pixel Book Go is essentially a Pixel Slate in a different form factor. It is literally the exact same hardware, just in a different body. It is there's no Pixel Book Pen support. So that's that. It comes with a keyboard that you don't have to pay $200 extra for. That's a really nice perk. So I feel like this is like, it's like the Pixel Book or the Pixel Slate was kind of a bet on Chrome OS's direction toward, I guess, trying to serve the consumer tablet space. And it seems like that bet just totally failed. If Google can't do a flagship first party tablet of their own and really make the touch and Android app tablet side of things work, then no one can, at least not yet. And so
I think
that was just their bet last year. And there were other things that were kind of building up to that. Like Acer did the Chromebook Tab 10. I think that was the very first Chrome OS tablet. And there were other things that were building up to this like idea that Chrome OS devices could be tablets. And it just flopped miserably, obviously. I mean, how many units did the Pixel Slate sell? You think like less than 5,000? I don't know. Not many.
Yeah.
I have not seen a single one in the wild.
Absolutely not.
Not even in San Francisco or New York. Like, I've never seen a single one. Not even one. That's saying something, because I don't think I could say that about any other hardware product that Google has launched since, I don't know, what, Pixel C? I mean, Pixel C was the last Google device, hardware device, that I've never seen in the wild.
Yeah.
So, it was a miserable failure. And this device is the exact same device, just in a different form factor. And I like it a lot. It's what the Pixels, I mean, I can't say, it's what the Pixel Slate should have been, because they're completely different things. But if Google had just launched this last year, and actually they were going to launch this last year, we've heard from multiple sources now that this was supposed to be launched alongside the Pixel Slate. And I don't know what the reasoning why it didn't, maybe some kind of hardware development issues.
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't want to cannibalize any potential that the Pixel Slate had, which is laughable in hindsight. I don't know. But this is a far more compelling device for me. It's also $649, and that's a big deal. That's the story about this device. This is a first party, good overall user experience, very nice Chrome OS laptop that does the majority of what most people need a laptop to do. And by most people, I'm talking about, you know, the entire college student market, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a great value, I think. And it's not an amazing value. It's not like an absolute, like, no-brainer purchase, but it's great. I think it's a really good product overall. And I'm probably going to buy one for myself. So yeah, I like it a lot. And one thing that's really weird to me though is that do you feel like, I mean, maybe you don't agree with this. Do you feel like the touchscreen is out of place? Like, it doesn't feel like a touchscreen device, and so
it doesn't. No, it doesn't. It very feels like a traditional form factor, but everything has a touchscreen. So
right, but it's like,
that's why.
It's like if I forget that it has one, and I just use it like a normal Chromebook. And it's, I feel like this device, the story of this device is that it just proves that this attempt to expand Chrome OS into the tablet space, into the touch space, just is going to be a long term. I don't think that it's going to be. I mean, they did so much to Chrome OS over the last 2 years to make it more touch friendly, and I feel like a lot of those changes are maybe they're going to be beneficial anyway because all things are touchscreens, like you said. But I don't.
Yeah,
think it's going to. I don't think we're going to see it go to the iPad level.
No, I don't either. So yeah, Pixelbook Go coming next month.
$649. Not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to the Pixel Slate, right?
Compared to the Pixel Slate, it's a hell of a value. It is. It absolutely is.
So yeah, let's talk about Google Home Mini. Nest and Google Nest Mini.
Yeah. Still
haven't gotten used to saying Google Nest. Nest Mini and Nest Wi-Fi, which are the two new smart speakers.
Yes.
That Google announced this month.
They're cheap. The Nest Mini is $49 again. It's cheap. It'll be everywhere this holiday season. They finally fixed the touch controls where you can tap to pause music.
Yep.
And you can put it on a wall, which is handy for some people. And yeah, it's a Nest Mini. There's really nothing to it.
Yeah, it's Nest Mini 1.5.
1.5, yes. And I am curious. They did tout its machine learning capability with a chipset on there and to do faster assistant commands. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes in the future.
Yeah. And Nest Wi-Fi is really, really adorable.
It's really adorable. It's better than the Nest Mini. It looks better than the Nest Mini.
It looks like a Nest.
It looks like a mini HomePod, that's true. Cute marshmallow. It's what I like to call it.
Yes. And it is everything we thought it was. It is a upgraded version of the Google Wi-Fi. It looks much nicer. It will support everything but Wi-Fi 6.
Yes.
Yes. It will support your old Google Wi-Fi. So if you have one already, or two, or three, you can just throw on a new Nest Wi-Fi point. Wait, is the Wi-Fi point what you can add to the old, or can you also add a router to the old? Do you know?
I think it's a bit of everything. You can do everything.
Okay, so they're all interoperable.
Yeah.
I think that's correct.
Yeah, the hardware is similar.
Can you even buy the point by itself?
Yes, you can.
Okay, that's what I thought.
For sure.
Yeah.
So yeah,
really nice. I mean, but it's just a Home Mini inside there. So it's like literally the same exact quality as the current gen Home Mini. Nest Mini.
Dang it. Nest Mini. Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, it's a router. And it's just a really, really nice looking router. This feels like to me, so this is the culmination of all of Google's OnHub efforts. So do you remember?
Yes, I do.
So they tried these third-party $300 Wi-Fi routers under the OnHub brand, and they had an OnHub app, and the idea was reinvent the Wi-Fi router and make it physically pretty to put in your kitchen on the counter instead of hidden in a deep corner in your office, and also make the app experience like far more friendly. You can do things like speed tests and control, you know, access and stuff like that on the OnHub app. Is the OnHub app even still on the Play Store? I don't remember. I think it got replaced with Google Wi-Fi app. But anyways, so this Nest Wi-Fi, like the original Google Wi-Fi, I don't know if you remember me. I think I mentioned this on, I don't think we were starting the podcast back then, or we were doing the podcast back then. But I wrote, I think in my hands-on or my review of the Google Wi-Fi, I wrote one of the weirdest things about it was that it was a weird step back from some of the OnHubs. So Google tried so hard to make the on hub physically attractive, and like they had all these different designs and you could customize it and you could put it in your,
which was crazy. The on hub customization, like they encourage like 3D printing shells and whatnot.
Yeah. Right. And then they just ditched all of that when they announced, when they asked the Google Wi-Fi in 2016, they were just like, oh, we're just going to do a regular router. It's slightly more sleek than every other router, but it's still just a router. It's a little white, you know,
yeah,
white sphere. And then this feels like they've finally iterated to the point where they're kind of achieving both parts, where the Google Wi-Fi was obviously a step up from a technological standpoint. Now the Nest Wi-Fi is all of the best of the Google Wi-Fi, and then all of the best of kind of the... Got three different colors, which is like, that's not a thing in the router space. You can't pick three different colors for your router.
No,
they've got three different colors. The points are actually useful for things other than, you know, router. And they look really nice. So, yeah, that's the alphabet scoop context on that you're not going to get from anyone else. No one else remembers on hub.
Basically, yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, and then I guess the last thing they announced is the Google Pixel Buds.
Yes.
So this was the only thing that didn't leak, and they spent the first 20 minutes of the keynote talking about it. I think they're probably just trying to say, "Hey, we did something that didn't leak. Hey guys, hey, we managed to keep one little secret. Oh, by the way, why were we able to keep this a secret? Why were we able to keep it a secret?
Because it's not coming out till the spring."
Yeah, which is unfortunate because these things look nice. They look. Did you get a chance to try them on at the event?
I didn't put them in my ear. I held the case. Very tiny, very eggshell, very cute.
How do you facilitate letting reviewers all try on the same pair of in-ear Pixel Buds?
I don't think they did.
Fun to swap earwax or whatever.
No. I saw people
trying them on, whether or not they should.
Yeah, whether or not they should. As somebody who likes the out-of-ear AirPod style and that it's not in my ear canal, I don't know how I feel about Pixel Buds when I'm actually in get the chance to try it out the rubber tips. But it's cute, and it's everything the first Pixel Bud should have been. Hands down.
Yep. The first Pixel Buds... It was a weird thing. Like, why did those exist? I don't know.
Yeah, it's honestly...
They really wanted to show off the live translate stuff, which, honestly, I mean, do you know anyone who uses that? Have you heard of anyone who uses that? Have you heard of anyone on social media or real life who is like, man, I love my Pixel Buds.
No.
I'm so glad that I have the live translate feature when I'm traveling abroad.
No, just use the app because everybody wants to see the screen as two.
And do you think that's a functionality thing or a UX thing? Or do you think that's a knowledge or a consumer knowledge thing? Like, do you think it's because people don't know the Pixel Buds exist and the live translate exists? Or do you think because it's not practical or both?
I think I'm going to say not practical in that, like, the future... Like the universal translator from Star Trek. It's not fast enough. It's not instantaneous enough. It's not one to one where there's feedback and such. So no, it's not. I don't think it's technologically there yet.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it will get there, but it's going to be a while.
Yeah.
And it's also a weird thing to have Pixel. I don't know why. It's a weird thing that that's Pixel Buds exclusive. It makes sense because everything that Google does in the AI, everything
else. All Google Assistant headphones have that now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. But it was exclusive at first.
Yeah, that was weird at first. Audio routing capabilities.
That's par for the course with how Google has approached these things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ben in the comments, he said, Pixel C, how I miss you.
Pixel C, how
what do you miss? Ben, what do you miss about the Pixel C?
Also, apparently Ben is a defender of the Nexus 9 form factor, which is no, it's bad. HTC, it was bad. It was really bad.
And people were taking pictures of you like poking the back, and it like the plastic was like indenting in the back. Do you remember
that? Weird old Nami case.
That was the day one controversy on the Nexus 9.
Yeah. If we're registering
time was this, an awful tablet. It was the worst tablet I've ever owned. And I don't know if this was a hardware problem that mine, and I've heard this from many other people, but mine literally slowed to a crawl. Like within 3 weeks of owning it, it was entirely unusable. Like it took like 15 minutes to boot up.
Okay. So Nexus 2012, Nexus 7, 2013, Nexus 7, 7-inch form factors. 2014, they jumped to this 8.9-inch for the Nexus 9. That was pure hubris on Google's part, thinking they could encourage developers to build tablet apps. That's the only reason the screen is big, to like give this flagship device for the developer to give away and build apps for this. And it was a failure. So they should have just made another Nexus 7.
Yeah, because what motivates developers to build apps is not devices that they get for free at developer keynotes. Unfortunately. Unfortunately for Google. what motivates developers to build apps is obviously multifaceted, but a big part of it is what people actually buy.
Yeah.
Lots of people buy the iPad.
Yeah.
And it's so developers have a monetary incentive to actually build apps for it.
But yeah, this was a weird diversion into Nexus history.
Yeah, I guess the last thing we forgot to talk about this, and this is the very first thing that Google talked about at the keynote, was the Google Stadia, which is now coming out in a month, November 19th, right?
November 19th. And let's say that
Founders only,
and this is very clearly a Google product, a Google service, which is getting new features at a later date, and not everything's ready at launch. And you would have thought that given how long Google's working on this and the fact that they announced GDC, there would have been more feature complete on day one, but no. This is just like any other Google product getting better over time. And that is the perennial promise of Google. So yeah, cloud gaming beginning November 19th. Beginning.
For founders. Which is now sold out in all 14 countries as we reported this week.
Which wouldn't we love to know how many units were actually sold? Wouldn't we love that?
We'll never know.
Yeah.
We'll never tell us.
No. I'm honestly surprised.
I'm still waiting for, I think, and I've mentioned this on the show before, I think that Google Stadia will be made or will make or break, will be made or broken by exclusive games.
Yeah.
Those come from Google's little first party Stadia studio or managing to score some deals, but they have not announced very many exclusives, and the ones they have have not been compelling, in my opinion.
They need their own Halo. That's
the end. That's really what it breaks down to. They need Fortnite. They need their own Fortnite or their own Halo or their own.
Yeah. Something.
Because otherwise, I don't see this being immediately compelling to gamers.
No, it's
also LOL at everyone that thought the Pixelbook Go was going to be a Google Stadia machine.
I mean, they called it Go, and that was something. That was a tiny morsel of possibility and speculation. Oh, yeah, there's a 4K display. I keep forgetting that. I couldn't tell the difference.
Well, you didn't use the 4K display model.
1080, that's true. 1080p.
That's another thing. We found out only the top-end model has 4K display.
Yeah, but that's to say that 1080p display is pretty good.
Sure, if you don't notice it, then that's best case for you. So I think that's pretty much it this week or last week. Google also killed off two primary things, Google Clips and Daydream. So we can talk about that more in the future, but Daydream is gone. And that was a very big tentpole to the original Google hardware event in 2016. So I guess that can wrap the show there. This event this month was five major products that Google announced previously. The Google Pixel, obviously, Pixelbook, and the Nest Mini and the Nest Wi-Fi and the Pixel Buds. These were all five existing products, and Google announced refreshes to them all, and they are all pretty I mean, none of them seem to be absolute failures. None of them seem to be absolutely, uncompelling. At the least, you know, we have the Pixel Buds, which we won't have a verdict on for 6 months. And at best, I guess the Pixel 4 is probably the best of the bunch, maybe.
Look at the Pixel 3. Yeah. I thought the Pixel 2 is fine.
Yeah. No, I mean, Pixel 4 is
fine. Yeah.
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 So that's the story of this event, but this event also brought the death of two dearly beloved Google products. One announced at the first event, one announced at the second event. So Google's maturing and Google's growing up a little bit. It's still yet to be seen, though, how that pans out in the long run. So, yeah, that's been the show, I think. We will talk more about all these things next week, because by the time our show happens next Thursday, we will have our full Google Pixel 4 and Pixel 4 XL reviews up. And we'll have plenty more thoughts on the rest of all these products. Until then, you can tune in to Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast on Thursdays and publish on Friday mornings. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Google Podcasts, Google Play. And you can also listen over at 95Google.com. Be sure to head over to iTunes and leave us a review. Let us know what you think of the show. And thanks for tuning in, as always. And thanks, Diver, for joining me. We'll see you next week.
Bye.